Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm in 1 Kings chapter 6, and we will see Solomon building his famous temple. Our context is this. In the last chapter, we see the preparations made for building the temple. Namely, where did Solomon get the building materials, the cedar and the stone, mainly from Hiram? So we start now in 1 Kings 6, 1. In the 480th year after the Israelites had come out of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, the second month, he, that Solomon, began to build the temple of the Lord. Now, this 480th year after the Exodus is a date that's used to calculate the date of the Exodus. It's used by traditional scholars, conservative scholars. For example, Walter Kaiser, my old professor at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, also the famous Thiele, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but he and Albright have the two basically accepted dates. They differ a little bit, but Thiele's the guru of dates. And these traditional scholars have it dated, the Exodus dated at 1446 B.C. That's the date I always use because it's the easiest. You calculate it this way. Solomon took office in 970. That date is almost dead certain. He is now in the fourth year of his reign. It says that in verse 1, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, he began to build the temple. So that means he started building the temple at 966 B.C., so then you take the 480 years that's provided in verse 1, add that to 966, and you get 1446 B.C. Now, we'll say that this date is controversial. I'm going to give you some other dates besides the traditional date that have been suggested. The famous Usher of Ushers, he was in the Westminster Assembly that did the 1648 Westminster Confession of Faith. He's famous because he dated the time of Adam and Eve down to the minute, I think, down to a very precise time. His dates are no longer looked at as relevant anymore, but he dated the Exodus at 1491. Josephus had it at 1552. The Catholics have it at 1512 B.C. The Septuagint has it at 1406 B.C. A scholar based using Acts 13, verses 17 through 21, has it at 1536 B.C., and a scholar named Hoffmeyer has it at 1596 B.C. Let's just take the simple traditional date, 1446 B.C., and we'll all be happy. We just don't want to make it a test of orthodoxy, as some people tend to do. So, in 966, the fourth year of Solomon's reign, in the month of Ziv, which is April or May, nice time for starting a temple. Ziv is also called Iyar in the Hebrew calendar. It's the second month of the religious year. I just tried to do a study to distinguish the Hebrew and the Babylonian names, and I have never seen anything more confusing in my life. It's almost as confusing as this description of the temple is going to be. So I just don't worry about it anymore. Just got two names, Iyar and Ziv, second month, April or May. We go to 1 Kings 6, 2. The temple that King Solomon built for the Lord was 60 cubits long, 20 wide, and 30 high. Now, as we measure from west to east, we get 60 cubits. We know that the Holy of Holies, as we'll see later, in the far west end of the temple is 20 cubits long, and compared to the tabernacle, which is 10 cubits long. And then the holy place, as you're going from west to east in Solomon's temple, is 40 cubits long. So the holy place in Solomon's temple is twice as long as the Holy of Holies in Solomon's temple. The tabernacle had the same proportions. The Holy of Holies was 10 cubits long and the holy place in the tabernacle was 20 cubits long. So the holy place is twice as long in both the tabernacle and in Solomon's temple. So 20 and 40, the length. That makes a total of 60, so that matches with verse 2 here. The temple was 60 cubits long. The temple in verse 2 is said to be 20 cubits wide. The tabernacle was 10 cubits wide. So again, Solomon's temple is twice as wide as it is long. So from north to south in Solomon's temple is 20 cubits. So things are pretty easy here. You just double the dimensions, the plain dimensions, the flat dimensions, of the tabernacle. Just take those dimensions of the tabernacle and double them, and you got Solomon's temple. However, that's not true with the height, at least the height over the holy place. That's 30 high. Now, we've got verse 2 says that the temple is 30 high, but that's not referring to the whole temple. That's just referring to the holy place. How do we know that? Because if we go to 1 Kings 6:20, we read this. The inner sanctuary, that's the Holy of Holies, was 20 cubits in length, 20 cubits in width, and 20 cubits high, not 30 cubits high. So let's summarize the measurements of the Holy of Holies in Solomon's temple. It's 20 by 20 by 20 cubits, a perfect cube. And that has some religious significance, as we'll point out later. Remember, the New Jerusalem was also a perfect cube, the place where God dwells with his people. The Holy of Holies is the place where God dwells with the high priest who represents his people. Perfect cube. The tabernacle also was 10 by 10 by 10. Same perfect cubic dimensions, just half as big. So to summarize, the temple was twice as long as the tabernacle, it was twice as wide as the tabernacle, and three times as high as the tabernacle, except over the Holy of Holies, which was twice the height of the tabernacle. Now I've got a picture of the tabernacle here, of Solomon's temple here. It's similar but different to the tabernacle. So let's just start at the eastern end. You got steps going into the inner court. We're going to see later there were two courts in Solomon's temple, the inner and the outer. But this is the upper court. You have to go up the steps to get to it. Jeremiah says calls it an upper court because you got to climb. So you climb up the steps. You get in to where the big old bronze altar is, right directly in front of the front door of the temple, right in front of the two big tall statues, the northern statue being our pillar. I should say it's not really a statue, it's a pillar called Boaz, and the southern pillar called Jachin, if I'm pronouncing that right, which I'm probably not. Boaz and Jachin. If you go south toward the outer edge of the inner court, we get to the big bronze molten sea, the laver sometimes it's called. Now that's very similar to the tabernacle. So let's go now through the front door of the temple. We don't go straight into the holy place as in the tabernacle, but we go into a porch, and then we go through a couple of bifold doors into the holy place. Got the same name as the tabernacle, the holy place. Now the holy place is different than the tabernacle because it's got 12 tables of showbread, 6 on the northern wall, the upper wall, and 6 on the southern or the lower wall. 6 tables of showbread. Remember, in the tabernacle, there was just one table of showbread on the northern wall. Likewise, there are 12 seven-branched lampstands. Each seven-branched lampstand is between the wall and the table of showbread. All 12 of them are like that. 6 on the northern wall, right next to the northern wall, right behind the tables of showbread. So each table of showbread is lit up by the light of the seven-branch candlesticks. Now remember, in the tabernacle, there was only one seven-branch candlestick on the southern wall. Now at the western, as you go west along the holy place, you run into a golden altar of incense, which is similar to the tabernacle. Then you go up some steps into the Holy of Holies, and you see the ark in the middle. Now that's the same ark that was in the tabernacle because it was taken from, well, as you travel it around, it was originally stolen from the tabernacle at Shiloh. When the Philistines did it, the Philistines didn't like the hemorrhoids that it developed in them, and so they gave it back to the Israelites. And after it ends up at Kiriath-Jearim for a long time, west of Jerusalem, David finally brought the ark back into the city, and Solomon took that same ark and put it here. So it's the same ark with a little cherubim, golden cherubim at the ends of the acacia wood ark. But now what's different here is there are two extra cherubim, big ones, wingtip to the outer wall, and then stretching all the way to the ark on the northern side of the Holy of Holies. On the southern side of the Holy of Holies, you have another cherubim stretching his wings out from the wall to the ark. Now, let's go outside the holy place and Holy of Holies, outside the temple proper, go to the inner courtyard, and we will see something that's not in the tabernacle at all. 10 lavers with their bases distributed all along the walls, 5 on the southern wall of the temple and 5 on the upper wall. Also, another addition that you don't see in the tabernacle, outside the walls of the building, you have 3 stories, which I'll describe later, and they were called the priest's rooms because the priest would live there and store things there. And there was a bunch of them all along the southern wall, all along the back western wall, and all along the northern wall of the building. Well, that gives you an overview. Now let's get into the details. 1 Kings chapter 6, verses 3 through 6. Verse 3, the portico at the front of the main hall of the temple extended the width of the temple, that is 20 cubits, and is projected 10 cubits from the front of the temple. All right, so we have a 20 by 10 porch. It was later called Solomon's porch when Herod took the second temple Well, I imagine it might have been called Solomon's Porch at the time of Solomon also. I should have just, I'll stick with my diagram here. That's Solomon's Porch. The pulpit commentary says of Solomon's Porch that it was not a colonnade. A colonnade is called a porch of pillars in a different context, but it's not a colonnade, but it was formed by simply prolonging the side walls and possibly the roof. Barr, another commentator, holds that it had only side walls and ceiling and was entirely open in the front, and the fact that no mention is made of any door or opening, though the doors of the other parts of the edifices are all of the edifice are all referred to. So, it's an open porch right in front of the whole building, extending to the width of the building, namely 20 cubits. We don't know. We assume it does not have a door. We don't know. It probably doesn't have a door in front of it. It may or may not have been covered over the top. Verse 5, against the walls of the main hall and inner sanctuary. The main hall is the holy place and the holy of holies, and the inner sanctuary. Well, the main hall is the holy place, and the inner sanctuary is the holy of holies. So along those walls, he built a structure around the building in which there were side rooms. Now, I've already told you about that. Those are the priest rooms where priests lived and where things were stored. Verse 6, the lowest floor was 5 cubits wide, the middle floor 6 cubits wide, and the third floor 7. Now that's confusing. I'll have to explain that. He, that Solomon, made offset ledges around the outside of the temple so that nothing would be inserted into the temple walls. All right, so picture this if you can. Around the first 5 cubits, the lower 5 cubits of the temple wall, the temple wall is a certain breadth. It's not given. We don't know what it is. But then you go to the next 5 cubits as you climb upwards on the wall. The thickness of the temple wall shrinks by 1 cubit. That, of course, will create a ledge on the bottom 5 cubits of the wall. All right, you go up the temple wall another 5 cubits, and then the temple wall gets narrower by another cubit. So that will create another ledge at the top of the second floor, the second 5-cubit floor of side rooms. Now, these ledges were used so that beams could be laid on the ledges across the ceiling of the side rooms. That way, you had something firm to hold the beams that are going to be the ceilings of the side rooms, ceilings and floors of the three stories of side rooms. You got something firm to hold those beams, but at the same time, you don't have to run the beams through the wall, which would screw up the interior of the temple, which is going to be covered with cedar and gold. It's pretty clever how this is done. Now, the text doesn't say anything about these ceiling beams or floor beams of the three stories of side rooms. When you get to the outside wall of those side rooms, I assume that that is done in the traditional way. They just penetrate the wall, and the wall is made around the beams, and so it's not smooth on the outside of the priest rooms. Well, that's hard to describe when you don't have a map, or don't have a diagram, but I hope that does it for you. Again, the whole point is, in verse 6, so that nothing would be inserted into the temple walls. We want to make this temple beautiful, smooth, and this would do it. Now, I skipped verse 4 by accident. Let me go back and get it. Verse 4. He, that Solomon, made narrow clerestory windows in the temple. Now, if you recall, if you've ever seen medieval Western European cathedrals, many of them had the narrow row of windows right under the ceiling to let light into the interior of the temple. That's what a clerestory window is here. Now, the pulpit and Cambridge commentary says there is much dispute concerning what these windows are. You got Hebrew translation problems, and plus this architecture is difficult. But I'm just going to say clerestory windows. That's the NIV translation. Several commentators, Colin Delitzsch, Jameson, Fawcett, Brown, and Poole, say that the clerestory windows, as you move from the outside wall to the interior of the temple, the clerestory windows got wider and broader, which is kind of interesting. The idea, say these commentators, is to let light and air in through those windows. Remember, there wasn't much light in the temple. There's no way for light to get in the temple except through these clerestory windows, and also the candle flames of the 12 seven-branch candlesticks. But light and air needs to come in, and of course the smoke needs to get out because there's a golden altar of incense in there burning incense, as well as the smoke that comes from the 12 seven-branch candlesticks, so the smoke's got to get out. So that's what those windows were for. We go now to 1 Kings 6, verse 7. In building the temple, only blocks dressed at the quarry were used, and no hammer, chisel, or any other iron tool was heard at the temple site while it was being built. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't any iron tools used at the quarry or at the forest where the cedars were cut down in Lebanon. Of course, there were tools used there. They had to be. They couldn't get the rocks out. Well, what this means is that at the quarry, the rocks were cut and dressed and shaped to fit properly into the temple. So you can make a bunch of noise at the quarry, but not at the temple. Now, what would this do? Well, it'll cut down on transportation costs because the temple blocks are smaller if you cut them, dress them. Now, I'd imagine that would be extremely difficult to do, to cut the blocks to fit perfectly when they got to the temple. But these ancient builders, look at the pyramids in Egypt. They know a lot more than I do about heavy construction work. So that doesn't really surprise me that they could do that. Now, Cambridge Commentary mentions two scriptures, that probably led the Israelites to do it this way. Exodus 20, verse 25. If you make a stone altar for me, you must not build it out of cut stones. If you use your chisel on it, you will defile it. So, again, I assume that law means at the site of the temple. Actually, the law meant you don't cut the stones at all, either at the quarry or at the tabernacle. You just use rough stones. We don't want all this religious, Catholic-looking, glorious stuff. Just make rough stones. Keep you from getting proud. Another verse, which Cambridge Commentary says that the Israelites were probably thinking about here, or Solomon was thinking about, is Deuteronomy 27:5. Build an altar of stones there to the Lord your God. You must not use any iron tool on them. No chisels, no iron tools. Okay, so that's what they did. And again, I think it's not an exact application of the verse. The verses in Exodus and Deuteronomy means you don't cut the stones at all. You don't dress them at all. But here, they dressed them at the quarry and then didn't dress them at the temple site. So it's a little bit different. Now, no hammer was used, but they did have mallets to drive the tenons into the mortices, the tenons of the pegs and the mortices of the receptacles for the pegs. I don't know which commentator gave me that idea, but you assume that you've got to hammer things in, but mallets are not going to make a lot of noise, and that's in the woodwork. Here we're talking about the stonework. Now, why is this fact that no hammer was used, why is this particularly noted in the text? Let me read you various commentators. Here's Adam Clark. There, in the fulfilled kingdom of God, Clark is talking about, there is no preaching, exhortations, repentance, ears, cries, nor prayers. The stones must all be squared and fitted here for their place in the New Jerusalem, and being living stones, must be built up a holy temple for a habitation of God through the Spirit. Well, Clark gets real spiritual and typological here. He refers this to the New Covenant when he says everything's going to fit together good, fit together well, fit together good in the New Jerusalem. I question that because then you have to say that the fulfilled kingdom of God is going to be silent, really silent. Now there's going to be praises, jumping up and down, hallelujah. No, it doesn't sound silent to me. I don't think that's a good take on it by Clark. So let's see what Matthew Henry says. Quote, it was to be the temple of the God of peace, therefore no iron tool must be heard. Quietness and silence suit and help religious exercises. God's work should be done with much care and little noise. Clamor and violence often hinder, but never further the work of God. Thus the kingdom of God in the heart of man grows up in silence. Again, the idea that we be still before the holy God. Now, there's nothing wrong with being still before God. That happens. You know, that's in the Bible. But really, there's also a lot of stuff in the Bible about joyous praise, the banging of the tambourines and such. I like Ellicott's take on this the best. Quote, but the idea implied in this prohibition was rather different, viz., the use for the altar of stones in their simple, natural condition, without, quote-unquote, pollution by the art of man. It has been chronicled in Heber's well-known lines, no workman steel, no ponderous axes rung, like some tall palm the noiseless fabric sprung. That Heber, I think, is the famous Indian missionary to India who wrote, holy, holy, holy. I don't know his well-known lines. They were well-known to Ellicott, not to me. But the idea is that the temple grows up like a palm tree, growing quietly, organically. It's not done by the artifice of man and his skill. Well, I think that makes more sense to me than the fact that religious exercises have to be done in quiet, in silence. We go down to 1 Kings 6, verses 8 through 10. The entrance to the lowest floor was on the south side of the temple. A stairway led up to the middle level and from there to the third. So he built the temple and completed it, roofing it with beams and cedar planks. And he built the side rooms all along the temple. Those are the side rooms I just told you about. The height of each was 5 cubits, as I mentioned, and they were attached to the temple by beams of cedar. Those are the same beams that were laid into the offsets into the temple wall, as I've just described. Now, these are the stairways that will allow the priests to get into their side chambers, those 3 stories of side chambers, each one of which is 5 cubits high. The description is just on the south side of the temple. We'll assume the same arrangement could be found on the northern side of the temple. So this stairway had to wind back and forth from the ground floor to the top of the 3 floors of the side chambers. Now, the commentator Benson, I think, describes it well on how this was done. You've got a stairway that starts on the ground, and it ascends to a gallery which is in front of the doors of the second-story chambers. In other words, a long platform. Once you got to that platform, you could then access any door of any room on the second story. Well, once you got to that gallery, then at the opposite end of the gallery, I say opposite end from which the stairway from the ground entered into the gallery, you go to the opposite end, and then the stairway would go to a gallery on the third floor. And once you got to that gallery on the third floor, you could enter any room on the third floor. Now, in verse 10, it says the height of each was 5 cubits attached to the temple by beams of cedar. I've already gone into that, so we'll move now to 1 Kings 6, 11 through 18. The word of the Lord came to Solomon, "As for this temple you are building, if you follow my decrees, carry out my regulations, and keep all my commands and obey them, I will fulfill through you the promise I gave to David your father. And I will live among the Israelites and will not abandon my people Israel." So Solomon built the temple and completed it. He lined its interior walls with cedar boards, paneling them from the floor of the temple to the ceiling, and covered the floor of the temple with planks of pine. He partitioned off 20 cubits at the rear of the temple with cedar boards from floor to ceiling to form within the temple an inner sanctuary, the most holy place. The main hall in front of this room, that's the holy place, not the most holy place, but the holy place, the main hall in front of this room was 40 cubits long. We've already talked about the dimensions already. Verse 18, the inside of the temple was cedar, carved with gourds and open flowers. Everything was cedar. No stone was to be seen. Now, how did this word of the Lord come to Solomon? Verse 11, perhaps, by a prophet. God wanted to remind Solomon that all the glory of the temple was it going to be what preserved him. Obedience was going to prosper his house. Now, this is a lot of glory in front of Solomon, and glory tempts anybody. And so God says, you've got to follow me, my decrees, you've got to carry out my regulations, you've got to keep all commands, which is just a way of repeating the same thing. Obey me, and then I will fulfill the promise I made to David your father. Now, what promise was that? Well, it must be a promise concerning the temple, because in verse 12 we read, "As for this temple you are a building, I will fulfill through you the promise I gave to David your father." So here, the word of the Lord is referring to a physical temple. Well, so then you ask, well, when did God ever say that to David that David's son was going to build that through Solomon, through you, Solomon, I'm going to build a physical temple? Where does it say that? Well, there's only one possible place, and that's in 2 Samuel 7:12-13, which is the famous prophecy of Nathan to David establishing the Davidic covenant. I'll read that now, starting with verse 12. "When your time comes," this is God speaking to David, "when your time comes and you rest with your fathers, I will raise up after you your descendant," that would be Solomon, "who will come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom." Okay? Verse 13, "He," that's your descendant, David, David's descendant, Solomon, "he will build a house for my name." Well, there's your promise of a temple. Well, there's a little problem with that, because if you look at the context here, the house does not necessarily refer to a physical house. It can also refer to a house of descendants, progeny. And of course, that's how ultimately it was fulfilled in the church. I talked about that in the last audio, but that's what's being referred to here. And of course, the temple is a type. The temple is a type of the New Testament temple of the Holy Spirit, which is the church. I'm taking a class on biblical theology, Old Testament theology, and I've often thought that people go type crazy, but I'm getting more and more comfortable with the Old Testament types. There's a pattern through what God has done, all the way through the Garden of Eden, to top of Mount Ararat, to the top of Mount Sinai, to the Holy of Holies, to the church, to the New Covenant, the New Jerusalem. There's a pattern to it all. And so this house that Solomon is building is a type of the glorious church. I'm convinced of it. So we're not going to worry too much about that prophecy being fulfilled physically or spiritually. Now, verse 15 says that Solomon lined the interior walls of the temple with cedar boards, and then he covered the floor with pine. Well, that translation of pine is the NIV. The Holman Christian Study Bible has cypress boards. The Hebrew is difficult, but I like cypress boards better because pine is not, I mean, I've got a whole house that I live in made out of pine. I know about pine. It warps, it bends, and it's cheap. Cypress, on the other hand, sheds water. It doesn't bend. It's hard as a rock, and it's very expensive. So I assume that these cypress board, the boards on the floor of the tabernacle were cypress, not pine. Now contrast that with the floor of the tabernacle. The floor of the tabernacle was dirt. It's only mentioned once in the Bible. This is according to the commentator according to Henry William Saltow, whom I don't know, but I assume he's right here. Numbers 5:17, the priest is to take holy water in a clay bowl and take some of the dust from the tabernacle floor and put the dust in the water. Now that was in connection with the famous ordeal of jealousy when a husband thinks his wife is catting around on him. You had to take dirt from the tabernacle floor. So things have gotten a little more uptown here in the temple. We go now to 1 Kings 6, verses 19 through 22. He, that's Solomon, prepared the inner sanctuary, that's the Holy of Holies, within the temple to set the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord there. The inner sanctuary was 20 cubits long, 20 wide, and 20 high, if I've already said that. Solomon overlaid the inside of the Holy of Holies with pure gold. He also overlaid the altar of cedar. That's talking about the altar of burnt incense, which is not in the Holy of Holies, but it's at the western end of the holy place. Solomon covered the inside of the temple with pure gold. And that's referring to the temple there. And the NIV translation is referring to the whole schmear, not just the Holy of Holies, but the whole temple, holy place too. He extended gold chains across the front of the inner sanctuary. That's across the front of the Holy of Holies, which was overlaid with gold. Everything's overlaid with gold. So he overlaid, verse 22, so Solomon overlaid the whole interior with gold. He also overlaid with gold the altar that belonged to the inner sanctuary. In other words, he put some more old gold on the Ark of the Covenant in the holy place. Well, that's kind of interesting because the Ark, well, let's talk about that Ark. The Ark, where we've last seen it, David had pitched a tent for it in Zion. This is in 1 Chronicles 15:1. He had brought the Ark back from where it had been stored for a fair amount of time in Kiriath-Yearim, a city to the west of Jerusalem. He brought the Ark into Jerusalem. You remember he had a big ceremony about that, you recall, and he was dancing, and his wife, Michal, started laughing at him. So he brings the Ark back, and he built a special tent because the tabernacle was still at Gibeon, which is about 4 or 5 miles to the northwest of Jerusalem. And so the Ark was back in Jerusalem. The tabernacle was not. But Solomon took the same Ark that David had, and he put it in his temple. As Gill says, Solomon made no new Ark. I think this is speculation, but I think it's very highly probable speculation. This is the same Ark. Verse 20 says that Solomon overlaid all the inside walls of the temple, or the Holy of Holies. In verse 20, it's the Holy of Holies. He overlaid the inside with pure gold. In verse 21, he covered the inside of the temple. That's the Holy of Holies, with pure gold. So everything's covered with gold. And at the end of verse 20, he says, Solomon, the text says that Solomon also overlaid the altar of cedar. That sounds like Solomon overlaid the golden altar of incense with gold. And he made the golden altar of incense out of cedar. I'm assuming this is a new altar. The old altar is probably back up there at Gibeon with the tabernacle and its old furniture. Some people say the translation should be that Solomon overlaid the altar with cedar, not with gold, in which case it would mean he made a stone altar and then put cedar on top of the stone altar. Doesn't really matter. Verse 21, Solomon extended gold chains across the front of the inner sanctuary. I bet that was expensive, the inner sanctuary being the Holy of Holies. Again, the idea is you can't get into the Holy of Holies without special permission because that's where God is, and God is holy, and we're not. People are not holy. So everything is just overlaid with gold. Now, gold is very expensive. Solomon must have been bodaciously wealthy in order to pull this off. Now, in verse 22, Solomon is said to overlay with gold the altar that belonged to the inner sanctuary. That's the altar of incense, and we've already said that that's already mentioned in verse 20. Well, that makes it sound like verse 20 should be Solomon overlaid the altar with cedar, and then in verse 22, he overlays the altar with gold. He puts the gold on top of the cedar. That's a little bit dicey because of the translation. Now, these chains that I just mentioned that were put in front of the Holy of Holies, those chains were in addition to a veil of blue, which we read in 2 Chronicles 3:14. He made the veil of blue, purple, and crimson yarn and fine linen, and he wove cherubim into it. That's very similar to the tabernacle. Anyway, to sum all this up, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown said that if you went into the temple that you would see, quote, nothing, you would find that, quote, nothing met the eye but pure gold. Gold, of course, is I've got some gold buried. I'm not going to tell you where, but I've got some gold buried because it still has value. It's pure. It's beautiful. It's long-lasting. It conducts electricity. It does all kind of good things. And it's heavy, and it is very, very expensive. We go to 1 Kings 6:23 through 28. In the inner sanctuary, that's the Holy of Holies, he made a pair of cherubim of olive wood, each 10 cubits high. One wing of the first cherub was 5 cubits long, and the other wing 5 cubits, 10 cubits from wingtip to wingtip. The second cherub also measured 10 cubits, for the two cherubim were identical in size and shape. The height of each cherub was 10 cubits. That's about 15 feet, assuming a cubit is a foot and a half. So we're talking about a quite large wooden angel. He placed the cherubim inside the innermost room of the temple with their wings spread out. The wing of one cherub touched one wall, while the wing of the other touched the other wall, and their wings touched each other in the middle of the room. He overlaid the cherubim with gold. So we got olive wood overlaid with gold, 2 10-foot, 10-cubit-high cherubs. Their wings were 5 cubits on each side, so that means if you got 5 cubits on the left side, 5 cubits on the right side of one cherub, that's 10, and then you got 5 cubits on the left side and 5 cubits on the right side of the other cherub, that's 20, which is the width of the tabernacle. Quite impressive. This is in addition to the 2 cherubim that were already carved into the mercy seat of the ark, which was in the middle of this Holy of Holies. And again, the cherubim were overlaid with gold. Everything is with gold. The original ark was overlaid with gold. Now these new cherubim were overlaid with gold. We go now to 1 Kings 6, verses 23 through 28. In the inner sanctuary, that's the Holy of Holies, he made a pair, that's Solomon. Solomon made a pair of cherubim of olive wood, each 10 cubits high. One wing of the first cherub was 5 cubits long, and the other wing 5 cubits, 10 cubits from wingtip to wingtip. The second cherub also measured 10 cubits, for the two cherubim were identical in size and shape. The height of each cherub was 10 cubits. He placed the cherubim inside the innermost room of the temple, that's the Holy of Holies, with their wings spread out. The wing of one cherub touched one wall, while the wing of the other touched the other wall, and their wings touched each other in the middle of the room. He overlaid the cherubim with gold. John Gill says about these cherubim are different from those made by Moses and were besides them. What he's saying is that they were acacia wood covered with gold, cherubim on the ends of the mercy seat, which was placed on top of the ark, which was in the middle of the new Holy of Holies, because Solomon put it there. And so then in addition to those cherubim, we've got 2 big cherubim, wing tip to wing tip, extending from one side of the Holy of Holies to the other side. They were made of olive wood, Gill continues, talking about Solomon's big cherubim were made of olive wood, the cherubim made by Moses for the original tabernacle. Those cherubim were made of gold. Actually, they're made of acacia wood covered with gold. These stood on the floor of the house, the big ones, the new ones, Solomon's. They, the ones in the tabernacle at the two ends of the mercy seat, and were made out of it. They were one piece with the mercy seat and were with it in this holy place in Solomon's temple. Now, the height of these cherubim was extraordinary, 10 cubits, that's 15 feet. Those are some bodaciously big angels. Now, the only time that cherubim were mentioned in the Old Testament, they were 2 cherubim that guarded the entrance to the Garden of Eden. After Adam sinned, he was banished from the presence of God. God lived in the Garden of Eden, where everything was paradisical, and God was there, but man could not get back into it. A perfect type, if you will, or a prototype of the Holy of Holies. God's living in there with his Shekinah glory, but man cannot go in there. So that place where God lives, where man cannot live with him, is guarded by cherubim, just like the Garden of Eden after the fall was. We go now to 1 Kings 6, verses 29 through 36. Then he, that's Solomon, carved all the walls of the house round about with carved engravings of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers, inner and outer sanctuaries. The inner sanctuary is the Holy of Holies. The outer sanctuary is the holy place. The 20 by 20 by 20 Holy of Holies, the inner sanctuary, and the outer sanctuary, the 10 by 20 by 30 holy place. Verse 30, Solomon overlaid the floor of the house with gold, inner and outer sanctuaries. For the entrance of the inner sanctuary, the Holy of Holies, he made doors of olive wood, the lintel, and five-sided doorpost. So he made two doors of olive wood, and he carved on them carvings of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers, and overlaid them with gold. And he spread the gold on the cherubim and on the palm trees. So also he made for the entrance of the nave, that's the holy place, four-sided doorposts of olive wood and two doors of cypress wood. So we got two doors going into the Holy of Holies, two doors going into the holy place. The difference between the two doors are this. Going into the Holy of Holies, the posts that held up those two doors were five-sided, or five bevels on the doorpost. And going into the holy place, you also had two doors made out of olive wood, each door having a fold in it. But the posts that are holding up the doorway, the doors of the holy place are four-sided, beveled on four side, and they're made of cypress wood, not olive wood. The two leaves of the one door turned on pivots, and the two leaves of the other door turned on pivots. So each door was a bifold door. Left side of the entranceway had a door that was folded in the middle, and likewise on the right side, so four folds across each entranceway. Verse 35, he carved on it, meaning on the door of the outer holy place, the outer sanctuary. Solomon carved on it cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers, and he overlaid them with gold evenly applied on the engraved work. He built the inner court with three rows of cut stone and a row of cedar beams. All right, well, just to summarize all this, everything is covered with gold. Everything is either cypress wood or cedar wood. And everything has carved engravings on them, the same decorations or ornaments, cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. Again, the cherubim are to symbolize, you don't come into the holy place because I'm guarding it. Palm trees and open flowers, that's life, that's abundance, that's created abundance by God. And of course, gold is glory, majesty, riches, the riches of God, perfect, beautiful temple. Now, a few little details here before I take up verse 36. These doorposts that I said were five-sided or beveled on five sides, that is an interpretation of the translations besides the NIV. The NIV has five-sided posts. The Holman Christian Study Bible has five-sided posts. The New American Bible has beveled posts. The God's Word translation has five-sided or five sides, a post of five sides. The Young's Literal Translation gives us what the literal is, side post of fifth. A fifth. What does that mean? So the translation is very obscure. The Hebrew is obscure. The translation is difficult. The King James has it this way. A fifth part of the wall. The posts were basically dividing a fifth part of the wall, so they were fifths going across. I don't think that's really what it is. And likewise for the four-sided post, they said a fourth. The wall is divided into four parts. Benson says the original text here is very obscure, there being nothing in it for the words of the wall. It just says side post to fifth. It doesn't say anything about a fifth of the wall. It's just side post to fifth. It only says the lintel and side post were a fifth, which may be understood to signify, says Benson, that they held the proportion of a fifth part of the doors. That's how the KJV has it. But some think the meaning is that this gate was the fifth in number belonging to the house. That's even another interpretation. Well, most of the translations just say five-sided or four-sided, so we're going to stick with that. Now in verse 36, we see the inner court. Solomon built the inner court with three rows of cut stone and a row of cedar beams. Well, what is this inner court? Well, there were two courts around Solomon's temple. The inner court was called the court of priest in 2 Chronicles 4:9. Furthermore, he made the court of priest and the great court. That's the second court. That's the outer court, called by Chronicles the great court. So the inner court, called by Kings here, the inner court, is called the court of priest in 2 Chronicles 4:9. And from that we can deduce that only priests could go into that inner court, which surrounded the temple of Solomon. The outer court, we can assume, is where the people as a whole assembled, but only the priests could get into the inner court. Ellicott says this inner court was described as built around the temple proper, evidently corresponding to the outer court of the tabernacle. The correspondence to me is not exactly the same, because the outer court of the tabernacle, any old Israelite could go, but in this, well, yes, I guess the outer court in Solomon's temple, any old Israelite could go too, but only the priest could go into the inner court. There was no inner court in the tabernacle. Only the priest could go into the tabernacle itself. So it's roughly corresponding. Ellicott says further, quote, the mention of the inner court suggests that there was an outer court also. We have in 2 Kings 21:5, 2 Kings 23:12, a reference to the two courts of the temple, and Ezekiel 40:17, Ezekiel 42:1, and Ezekiel 42:8, a mention of the outward or utter court, as the King James has it. So there were two courts, inner and outer. And one more piece of evidence in Jeremiah 36:10, the inner court is called the higher court because it occupied a higher level. That's why we, in the diagram I have here of the temple, there's steps going into that outer court. Going into the inner court, there's steps. Now, one more detail we need to explain. The inner court is said to be built in verse 36 with three rows of cut stone and a row of cedar beams. Lots of confusion amongst the commentators. Exactly what does that mean? I'm going to take what I think it means, the best explanation that I saw. This is from the pulpit commentary. The stone and the cedar beams, it is thought, says that commentary, formed the enclosing wall of the court. So in other words, you got three rows of stone around the inner court, and then the, instead of a coping stone at the top, the wood was placed on top of the three layers of stone. The cedar beams would be the coping rather than a stone. I think that makes sense. We go down to 1 Kings 6, verses 37 and 38, and we'll finish this chapter. In the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid, in the month of Ziv. In the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished throughout all its parts and according to all its plans. So he, Solomon, was 7 years in building it. In the fourth year, that means the fourth year of Solomon's reign, which is 966, and Solomon's dates are pretty solid here. Not much disagreement on that, so that's nice. So in 966, the foundation is laid. In the 11th year, the house was finished. The 11th year would be 959, 970, when Solomon began to reign. 11 years after that is 959, and that year, 959 BC, matches the year given for the finishing of the temple on the Bible Hub timeline, so the dates are pretty secure here. The foundation was finished in the month of Ziv, so that makes the foundation being finished exactly 4 years after it was started, because in 1 Kings 6:1, at the beginning of this audio, I pointed out that the building of the temple started in the month of Ziv, which is also known as Iyar, the second month of the religious year. So it took 4 years to lay the foundation. One might ask, well, if it took 4 years to lay the foundation, that's a long time. Well, foundations are difficult. They take a long time. It took 7 more years to finish the whole building. It's finished in the month of Bul. Bul is October, November in the Julian calendar. It's also known as Makishvan or Sheshvan. It's the 8th month of the religious year. And interesting little factoid here. This is the only place in the Bible where the month of Bul is mentioned. Only one. When the text says that Solomon was 7 years in building the temple, it's really 7 years and 6 months. When you add the extra 6 months from the second month of Iyar to the 8th month of Bul. So 7.5 years to build a temple. And with that, we have finished chapter 6. And in our next audio, we will go to chapter 7. And we will watch and see Solomon building his palace. And then also we'll talk about the temple furnishings that go into the temple. Hope to see you in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.